Welcome to The Rink, a hockey podcast by hockey bloggers for hockey fans. I'm James Tapley-Gralian. This week, John Tortorella gets a job by way of Tom Rennie, who is fired by the Rangers. The Islanders and the Senators make a strange trade, and Ryan Miller is injured. You can imagine that Tom has a thing or two to say about that. That's all coming up on The Rink. Today is one of the more interesting days in the NHL, this Monday as we're recording this. The New York Rangers have decided to make European starting coaches that started the season in Europe, 4-for-4. Tom Rennie is out, finally. Pretty much what everybody predicted was going to happen finally happened after a 2-1 overtime loss against the Toronto Maple Leafs. Again, we're not looking at anything that's really that surprising as far as the coaching move, because the media has been talking about it for, months.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They started off with winning 10 of their first 13 games of the season,
right,
and then everything's just gone to hell lately.
Yeah, it has. And the Rangers played a mostly dispirited game against Buffalo the other night. You would figure that was a 4-point game against a team that was nipping at their heels, and you would have thought that they would have put in their best performance that they come up with, and if that was their best performance, it's not good enough.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't. From all the way up and down the lineup, I mean, their defense is slow. They don't have a whole lot of transition game. Their power play is really not is not any good. Their penalty killing is excellent. It's the only time in the game that they actually looked like they were engaged was on the penalty kill. We'll get into Scott Gomez later. We'll see what happens. I'm not sure if it's if the issue was Rennie or if the issue is deeper than that. I mean, it's not a particularly deep hockey team. The issue, I think, that a lot of people, I think the issue is a lot of people expected all of their kids to really take the next step, guys like Dubinsky and Pruka and Callahan, and they really haven't. Mm-hmm. And that's what I saw that's what I saw the other night when I was watching this. This is three times now I've watched them play Buffalo, and I see the same thing. I see no growth from those up and coming forwards, and that's the issue.
Mm-hmm.
Because the skill guys are not getting any support. I mean, so your veterans aren't getting any support because the kids really aren't playing with any kind of. I mean, Dubinsky's playing with Jam, but I mean, that's about it. And everybody else is just kind of taking up space on the roster.
Yeah. The interesting comment I heard about the game, the Toronto game, was that really the New York Rangers had to be more concerned. You know, feeling the pressure at that in that game, especially considering that the Leafs had nothing to lose and the Rangers had everything to lose, and that's the classic squeezing the sticks too tight and being extremely nervous of what's to come, and pretty much truth will out, that's exactly what happened. The team that had nothing to lose was the one that had the jump, that had some that made the that did something interesting. So I don't know. I think that we're looking at a team that that's been free falling, but at the same time what is the solution? Is the solution the coaching change, or is that going to get enough out of the players? And considering
the same thing that's been.
Well, considering who they're getting in, John Tortorella is officially now in as head coach. So it's going to be interesting in the media when he starts getting into it with Larry Brooks. But it's going to be fun.
I don't know. I mean, there are certain things about this that I'm going to enjoy. Torts in New York is going to be a blast.
Oh, yeah.
But the interesting part about it is how long does it take before Tortorella literally throws something at somebody's head in the locker room?
Mm-hmm.
That's why, if he throws something at somebody's head in the locker room and it doesn't connect or get the desired result. How long before he throws something at Glenn Sather to say, get me some players who don't suck? I mean, seriously. And really, it's been said in the media by a dozen different people. This is another classic case of, you know, GM screwed up, did not get the right mix of players. And a good coach has to take the fall for it, because you can't fire the players, but you can fire the coach. So, I mean, Tortorella's definitely going to, you know, liven things up, but whether it has the right effect or not, well, we'll see.
Yeah. See, my thing is that I don't understand what else, Glenn Sather was supposed to really do. And the thing is that at the time, look at who was available for at free agency at the time, and he got pretty much the top two of the big four that were on display at the time. Danny Briere and Ryan Smith. And what do? You have to go after the free agents that are available with the money that you have available. And he pretty much won the lottery, and then didn't work out very well.
That was last summer. Mm-hmm. That was 2 summers ago. Last summer, he had to replace Jágr, and he replaced him with Marcus Naslund. He went and got Zhardev from Columbus. He went and overpaid for Dan Fritchie, who now he then traded off to somebody else. I don't even think it's Drury and Gomez, though. Of course, they're going to take most of the heat because they're the guys making the most money, and they're the guys wearing the letters on their sweaters. No argument there. And, you know, even Drury's more than happy to, you know, be the stand-up guy and say, yeah, if you were going to blame anybody, you can start by looking at me and all of that stuff. Fine. You know, that we all expect Chris Drury to do that, and that's what he's going to do. The truth of the matter is that they've got a bad mix of – they've got the wrong mix of forwards, the wrong mix of defensemen. The Rangers' problem is still they don't have enough good transition game off the back end, and it's just – that's it. I mean, when you really look at their defense, it's still – it's very similar to what the problems they have in Ottawa. You've got a bunch of skilled forwards, but you can't get them the puck. You can't get them the puck with any, you know, with any speed or any authority coming out of your own zone and put the other team back on their heels. You can't scare the team on the rush, and so you can't generate any real offense. And then if you don't have anybody that's willing to go to the front of the net,
yeah,
you know. And I didn't see a whole lot of traffic in front of Miller the other night at all, mm-hmm. really. They're very easy to push to the outside, it just keeps going. I mean, there's a lot of talent in the kids that have not taken that next step. I think that Callahan and Pruka and Dubinsky and, you know, even guys like, you know, the penalty killing extraordinaire Breyer Betts, I think they're all going to be better hockey players than they are right now. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's going to take Tortorella to bring that out of them, and maybe it was Rennie who couldn't bring it out of them. I don't know. But that's where it starts, and it's got to start with that. They got to get a better transition game out of Mark Stahl, because he doesn't have one right now.
Mm. That, you pointed out something interesting that I'd heard a little bit on XM Radio today was Tortorella and the possibility of Sean Avery. Coming in, of course, you know, the hockey world revolves around Sean Avery, continues to, which is getting pretty old. But of course, this is going to be even more shove in that direction because of John Tortorella and comments he's made before about Sean Avery, and basically they thought he was a clown for what he'd done before.
And get him out of the league, I think, is the direct quote from when he was on TSN. So, it's nice that everybody's been talking about how Sean Avery's, you know, playing for the Hartford Wolfpack, and he's going to maybe come back to the Rangers because that's what they need.
We'll see about that now, huh?
Not without Tortorella in the locker room. I don't see that happening. If that happens, I can't see Torts taking this job without an explicit guarantee from Sather that that Avery doesn't play for them. But, you know, I've been wrong before, but I just don't see it.
Oh, well, I guess we'll see what happens. Maybe he gets brought up and sent right back down. If he's even signed, maybe Sather makes a show of force and brings him up regardless, you know, brings him in the organization regardless of Tortorella, just to say, just so you know, I'm in charge here. You know, we've seen sillier things before.
I know we have seen sillier things before in the NHL, and thank goodness for that. Otherwise, we would have nothing to talk about.
But turns out we have plenty, huh?
I was going to say, I'm like, and then so what's the over under on Tortorella making and not quitting before the end of the season?
Oh, yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe he's hungry enough now. I mean, he's been sitting at the TSN desk enough that, you know, and kind of watching over the league, that if he has any, you know, if he's concerned at all about, oh, maybe I shouldn't have done this, you know, maybe this isn't the team for me. He knows whether or not it's, you know, it's the right idea or not. So
I know, but then, you know, at the end of the day, if Sather actually wants to pull rank or anything, I think Torts can look at him and go, so when was the last time you were involved in a Stanley Cup?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So let's. I got a generation on you, Glenn. No, Avery's not coming back. So,
yeah.
If anything, he just needs to get the smarter, grittier play out of guys like Callahan and Dubinsky, who are really good agitators. They are. They're pretty good. By the end of the night, I was about ready to. I really wanted somebody to just, you know, knock Brandon Dubinsky in the teeth, and that's a good sign. But they got to be slightly smarter about it, I think, and they've got to be more consistent with it as well. And if they do that, and they get they get a better mix on their, they'll be all right. But we'll see. I don't know.
Well, I mean, a coaching change doesn't change the mix. I mean, yes, it changes the coach and how he's going to deal with these people. But at the same time, it doesn't change the mix of the players on the ice. And that's, you know, if that's really the problem, I guess we're going to find out shortly, aren't we?
Yeah, well, I mean, let's look at it this way. The change to Corey Clouston over in Ottawa, a lot was made about how he put in a different system. They go back to playing a more aggressive two-man forecheck and whatnot. And that worked for about a week and a half or so. And then Ottawa eventually, you know, they've, you know, started losing games again, started, you know, backsliding into the same old into the same old bad habits, where they got, you know, whitewashed by Montreal the other day on Hockey Day in Canada. They look like the same team they did back in November, as opposed to the guys who were beating everybody 2 weeks ago. So,
and this, of course, are the Senators who started the season in Europe and changed coaches.
Right. Yeah, Along with the Tampa Bay Lightning, who started in
all four teams that started in Europe have changed coaches at this point. And, you know, three out of the four of them weren't immediately obvious that it was going to happen after the first game, you know.
Right.
I'm starting to just get a feeling of this whole we're starting over in Europe thing as being a little bit of a jinx for these teams. I don't know if it's a jinx, if there's anything really to it. I hear, you know, we always hear a lot in the media, oh, there's nothing to it, there's nothing to it, there's nothing to it. But so far, that's not been the case. I mean, look at how the Ducks came out of the gate, after last season. Europe has been a killer for this whole start of the season thing.
With the exception of the Rangers, who they would play their best hockey in Europe. So maybe,
but,
you know,
and now,
maybe it's,
you know,
well, now, but do you blame their play in November and December, or more appropriately, December and January, on what happened back in the week in October? That's a real stretch in my mind.
It's a stretch, but I'm not saying that it's completely dead. What I'm saying is that I'm tired. You know, that we hear a lot of Europe not being a problem, but then the outcome seems to, you know, keeps pointing back to, hey, all of those teams did start in Europe.
That's just
linking this to that. That's not, you know, it's not BS. Obviously, it's just, you know. It is a correlation. You're right. Yeah.
I mean, correlation does not necessarily imply causality is all I'm really, you know, it's the first rule of statistics, just because it's correlation.
I totally understand. I'm just saying that if there's no link, fine, there's no link. But, you know, maybe it's time to stop saying, no, there's absolutely no link, and maybe somebody should start looking.
Well, you know, so what you're saying is, you know, I think the lady doth protest too much is really what you're getting at. So
kind of, yeah. I mean, I know that,
and that's fair.
I know that Brian Burke, when he came, you know, he blamed himself and what he did coming out of Europe for the Ducks' very poor start out of Europe, and he said that he felt that he handled it in the wrong way. Okay, fine, you know, and I can understand that. Just, you know, maybe it's not, maybe there isn't a lot to it, maybe there is a lot to it, maybe we need to just change the structure of the European games. Maybe what we need to do, instead of a 2-week you know, if in off years of the Olympics, for instance, take a 1 week break and everybody goes plays Europe. You know, to set up a couple games over there mid-season rather than in this, you know, at the beginning of the season or something, you know, something different. Let's something that would mix it up if we're going to do Europe. Just, you know, I've not been a fan of the start in Europe. I just, you know, I totally see it from why the league would want to do it. I just don't like it as being an NHL fan here myself. And this is what keeps happening. So,
Well, if anything like what you just suggested would be implemented, I would say the same thing with the Olympics. The hockey season already stretches too late into the summer as it is for most of the rinks. For most of the rinks, I would say if they're going to do something like that, then they should seriously consider cutting back to a 76-game schedule or something along those lines. If they're going to take that week or two, now let's pull a couple of weeks worth of games out of the schedule, shorten the season up a little bit. It'd be a boon for it would be a boon for everyone if they're going to do that. Mm-hmm. But we'll see.
And we've already talked about that. There's just no way that's going to happen anytime soon.
I know. It's a pipe dream and it's a fantasy. But you know, like everything else, why cling to the fantasy of being able to sell out 41 home games in a depression when the truth of the matter is you might be better off trying to, you know, or even keeping 41 games at 80% capacity when you'd be better off trying to sell out 35 home games.
Yeah. No, I
agree. I agree.
I just don't think anybody's going to buy. You know, is going to bite on that carrot. As realistic as it seems, as you know, to reasonable. You and I don't think they're going to bite on that sort of thing. Yeah,
no, I don't either. But.
I think they have blinders on to shortening a season, but you know, that's just me. And this is, you know, I mean, I'm looking at how many coaching changes have we had this year. I'm top of my head, I'm counting now 5. Mm-hmm. You know, Blackhawks and the European, you know, the European starters.
Oh, was Pittsburgh over in Europe?
Pittsburgh was, yes.
Okay. I couldn't remember.
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
They played
the Senators, didn't they?
I know it was the Rangers, the Senators, the
Lightning.
The Lightning, and I don't remember who else it was, frankly, but all right, whatever, that's fine. So yeah, it's at least 5. We have at least 5 coaching changes to begin so far the season.
Yeah, it's you know, and that's, you know, to me that's a desperate league. That's the win or die league right there. That if they're relying so much on getting to the playoffs to make their nut that they're that this is just sheer desperation in the league to keep the wins coming in, you know, to maybe even stretch out more three-point games to make everybody more satisfied so that the income can keep coming in. It just
there's a lot of desperation and that's going to speak to another couple of points about things that we have on our docket for the evening. Mm-hmm. One, the trade between the Islanders and the Senators for where they switched Mike Comrie and Chris Campoli for Dean McCammon in a first round, San Jose's first round pick. Mm-hmm. Ottawa is a team and a city desperate for wins. I think Eugene Melnyk is in some ways still clinging to the fantasy that this team can make the playoffs. Yeah, right. Or they're just looking for how they're going to shape the roster for next season. The rumor is that Comrie is likely to re-sign with Ottawa because it's frankly the only place that he's played in the NHL where he didn't completely suck. And that's fine if that's what they need, because they do need a legitimate second line center. And I guess behind Jason Spezza, if they're going to keep Spezza, then they might as well try and find a legitimate center who they're comfortable with to put in that role. Mm-hmm. Fair enough. That means you move other people down the depth chart and you move out your fourth line. You move out McCammon, who I think anchors the fourth line. If not, then plays right wing on the fourth line. And they try and get themselves a good young puck-moving defenseman in the form of Campoli, which I find interesting that the Islanders would give up their only really promising young defenseman, considering, as opposed to having Campoli somebody that you build the team around for the future. But, you know, I guess it takes two to tango. And it's not a trade that I think Ottawa wins the trade because they get the best player in the package, in this case, Campoli.
Yeah.
And it's probably the best trade that Brian Murray's made in like 18 months. So, you know. But
yeah, Comrie's the interesting one in there if he's going to be a free, you know, a UFA. And the fact that, you know, if he wants to go back, I mean, maybe he had discussions, maybe he talked to people, in Ottawa, to say, hey, yeah, I'd love to re-sign with you guys. And, now they can get a feel for him and how he's going to fit in with the system, with the rest of the roster that's still going to be around.
Mm-hmm. Well, he is going to be a UFA next year, as is McCammon. So really, the Islanders are just trading away. The way I break the trade down is it's rental for rental, and that's really Campoli for a first-round pick, or Campoli and part of Comrie for a first-round pick. It's really not – it's in the end of the day, it's really kind of a nothing trade in that Comrie went back to a non-playoff team. Mm-hmm. So it's like it's the only place where that's really interesting is that he didn't get farmed out to a playoff contender looking for second line centerman or some scoring depth down the middle, maybe Vancouver, because there's been a rumor, for example, even though they picked up Matt Sundin, there's still a rumor that out there that Vancouver is interested in Tim Connolly, of all people, looking for more depth, looking for more scoring depth, so that I guess they would go down they'd have Henrik Sedin, Matt Sundin, or Henrik Sedin, Matt Sundin, Connolly down the middle, mm-hmm. but. I haven't heard any hide nor hair about it. That's as far as I've heard, Vancouver's interested in Tim Connolly. But I would think that under those circumstances, they'd be interested in a guy like Comrie as well.
Yeah.
Really, it's more interesting that it's a guy who was expected to be dealt at the deadline going back to a non-playoff team. So it's basically, we can scratch him off the list of, teams getting better that we have to worry about and keeping up with the Joneses and all that.
Yeah.
So
when you break it down, basically it's Campoli for a first round pick and what's right. going to wind up being a pretty late first round pick. It's
San Jose's.
Yeah. It's not, that makes a lot more sense than, of course, Comrie being the big name that came through with it and kind of clouding the rest of it, I guess.
Right. Now, speaking of rumors, I saw this afternoon that there's the rumor floating around that Ryan Smith is on the block, or at least
I'm not buying that one for a second. I'm not buying it. Ryan Smith has a no trade clause and has said that he wants to stay in Colorado. So, if that's true, and I don't see why it wouldn't be, considering that on his exit of from Edmonton. He pretty much wore his heart on his sleeve during that whole thing. So I have a hard time buying that rumor. I think it's just, I think it's pretty much just that the Avalanche are essentially sellers at this point without a lot to sell. And you either trade away the future or UFAs.
Or you trade away the present.
Yeah. And there is no present right now, and there's not a lot worth. I mean, the biggest
Smith
name
that they is could, the pre- actually Smith is the present.
Well, Smith is the present, but he also, he's got what, 3 more years on his contract,
sure.
And I don't think if he wants to stay, he's going to stay. I mean, I'm pretty much
I think that's obvious. That's what the no trade clause gives him. But yeah. I think that where this thing might have some legs, and I'm not saying that I believe anything about this rumor, other than I think maybe Francois Giguère is putting the name out there and seeing what kind of bites come back, and then he could discuss these things with Smith if and how. He would be amenable to waiving his no trade clause, similar to the situation with Brian Burke and Thomas Cabrelle, where Cabrelle has given him a list of 10 teams that he'd be willing to trade. He'd be willing to go to all of whom, by the way, are in the Eastern Conference. And he said, the rumor is that he's pretty much he'd like to stay in Toronto or stay as close to Toronto as possible. Well, I got news for you, that's Buffalo. I'm like, do we really want Thomas Cabrelle? Do we really want another good puck moving defenseman who doesn't play physical? We already have those. We have 6 of those.
One of the things I want to clarify a little bit when I say I'm talking about the future and with Ryan Smith. Yes, Ryan Smith is the present, but the thing is that what part of Ryan Smith's signing was with pretty much the understanding that Joe Sakic's career is coming to an end, and that somebody kind of has to step into that role, and whether or not Ryan Smith was going to be that guy. When I talk about the future and Ryan Smith, that's the future I'm talking about, is that is taking over that lead for Sakic in the next year, in the next 2 years, and that kind of future moving forward in which direction you want to take the team, because Colorado has always been a team that has followed the leader in the captain, and that culture I don't really see changing anytime soon, and nobody else is really ready to step up to that. I mean, who's it going to be now that, you know, since Brunette is gone and he was the most, Andrew Brunette was the most, pretty much veteran on the team. There, you know, Milan Hayduk, I don't think is going to be the person for that. Paul Stastny is not ready. And then after that, who do you have ready to do something like that? Ian LaPerriere? Yeah. You know. He's not really. He makes a great A, and he even said that he wants to re-sign in Colorado. That they're talking, but that if they trade him, well, he's got to go where he's got to go, and he doesn't have choice. Which, you know, but he's even said that he would like to stay. So I don't. Yeah, the Smith thing, I'm really not seeing a lot of credence to. I think it fills headlines, I think it really gets readers to look at things, but other than that, I'm not seeing a lot to it. Now, if I'm wrong, I'll be the first one to say I'm wrong on that one.
I didn't figure that there was a lot to it, but like I said, I think at this point you've got 2 weeks before the trading deadline, and I think every GM who's currently out of the playoffs or seriously looks at themselves and says, I don't have a realistic shot at winning, is going to explore every avenue they can to secure their future. And if somebody comes back with a stupidly good offer for Ryan Smith deadline, Shiguer might have to, you know, talk Smith down from a cliff or anything to get it done, but he will. Because no trade clauses get waived all the time when push comes to the shove and there's enough quote unquote return on the table.
Right.
It always happens. You know, it just always happens. So at least, you know, as far as we know.
Yeah, no. I don't think he'll ever be back in the Islanders.
No, I don't think that's going to happen either. Now, the interesting part now is now with the way the Ducks are imploding as to whether or not they break up that team with what I saw, I think, this afternoon that they lost again. Like, was it last night or the night before? And their new GM is already throwing the entire team under the bus. So that's going to be very interesting.
Well, they're now, I mean, according to NHL, they won their last game, but they're 5-5. In their last 10, and they are in 10th place, 1 point out of the playoffs from the Minnesota Wild, who the Wild are making a bit of a comeback, 6-3-1 in their last 10. So
yeah, the Wild have played better of late.
And there's much, you know, better. Other teams are imploding a little more. Even Coyotes are taking themselves out of the race. Avalanche are not doing themselves any favors. The Oilers are certainly tanking.
Yeah, they're not playing especially great hockey when they need to win. You need to beat Calgary on a Saturday night and establish and make a statement.
Right.
And essentially, you know, you're looking at some very interesting things going on in terms of statement games over in the Eastern Conference. Carolina's made a pretty strong statement in the last week or so that they want to make the playoffs. So this is a team that was really reeling a couple weeks ago and then has now strung off two or three really solid wins in a row against, you know, quality opposition. Same thing with the Florida Panthers, are making a very strong case that, you know, really we want to make the playoffs. And Jay Bomeister ain't going anywhere, I can tell you that right now, unless somebody ponies up a lot, because there's no reason for Florida to trade him, even if he doesn't want to resign with them. This is their first chance to make the playoffs and make a serious run at the playoffs in 10 years. And they should take advantage of that down in South Florida, because they just should. And you can let Bomeister go for very little. And they still have, I think they still have enough in the pipeline from so many bad years that they can make it work. So, but I thought, you know, in that role, I'm looking at, you know, Philadelphia made a very strong statement the other night against Buffalo. It was a very good game. Mike Richards made a strong damn statement with a 5-point game and three different types of goals, and, you know, just in a really great performance on his part. And the Rangers are making a whole bunch of statements about how they don't want to make the playoffs. And Buffalo's been a very mixed bag, frankly. And they've played really well one night, and, you know, they blow Toronto out of the water and then lay two eggs against Philly and Carolina. They played a very strong game against the Rangers the other night, but you know.
Well, and of course we have to talk about that game. They're going to have to make a few more statements, because Ryan Miller's out indefinitely with a high ankle sprain, the bad ankle sprain that takes you out for a while, and especially as a goaltender. And who have we got in the pipeline? It's Lilleen.
It's Laleem, who's played very well when he's given the chance. He's played very well for a guy who plays like every 20 days.
Yeah.
I mean, but realistically speaking, you can't ask him to do much.
No, but what I'm looking at right now is track record on Laleem, and it's not great.
Sure.
You know, he's
so
lost many starting jobs down the line. And
But he was very good in Chicago last year, mm-hmm. and in a starting capacity. On a team that's not good, but it's not good defensively. I thought he was very good last year when he had to fill in for a significant stretch of time. He was 16-12, and that's why he was picked up this year. And really, other than the obvious, as Paul Hamilton put it this morning, the obvious goofy goal where it's obvious rust, mm-hmm. and you can see it, like, you know, this is a goal that you would, under normal circumstances, playing even close to 50% of the time, would never go in. But for a backup goaltender who doesn't play nearly at all, his rebound control is a hell of a lot better than it should be. Mm-hmm. So he's obviously keeping himself very sharp in practice as best he can. You'd be surprised. The question is going to be whether or not the team actually rises to the occasion and plays solid defense in front of him. If they do, they have a shot at least hanging around a playoff spot.
Mm-hmm.
So. If not, then yeah, we're going to be looking at a lottery pick real quick.
Well, you know, and the question is, to me, what this really points to is actually Chicago. They have the two headed monster of Hobby Bullen and Hue. And my thing has, of course, the question has always been, do they trade one? Do they trade one? And I've always felt, why would you trade one when you have success as you are? And mm-hmm. If I were running the Blackhawks, my feeling would be, hey, look at what just happened up in Buffalo. Why would I want to get rid of one of my guys when I've got two really solid ones that are okay with going into this situation? Why would I want to be the one who said I traded away the goaltender and no, we just lost one? I mean, what if this happened to Hobby Bullen and they traded away Hue or vice versa? They'd be stuck.
Well, it was the same thing that Darcy Bergeier was in for 2 years previous to that with Marty Biron. Mm-hmm. Everybody say trade Biron, get something. We need another defenseman. We need this. We need more grit. Blah 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 blah. I'm like, and Miller is one guy, mm-hmm. slew footing him behind the net away from being out for 2 months, and then who you got?
Right.
Nobody, because you had nobody of quality in the pipeline.
Right.
And when you had a Stanley Cup quality team, or at least what you thought was a Stanley Cup quality team, and two Eastern Conference finals in a row, that's fair enough. Mm-hmm. You're top four finalist 2 years in a row. You don't make, you don't move that asset if you don't have to.
No, no, and that's the thing. Chicago, why bother? You know, and now,
no, absolutely.
Now I can see it with Biron. I mean, really, I can see the fan frustration with Biron in a way
that
he never quite panned out the way that they wanted him to. He was never a super serious, solid star number one like people thought he was going to. When you got Miller in, it was like, okay, finally we can kind of let go of this, and you know, that I can see a reason for. But no, I don't see
any reason for Chicago to move those guys.
No, especially after this, you know.
No, and more importantly, what is Chicago missing at this point?
Nothing.
They've got reasonably good depth, a young depth on defense. They're not, you can't like load up a team on its first trip to the playoffs and expect them, if you load up with a couple of veterans, because who are you going to trade, say, Hue for example, or Hobby Bullen, you trade either one. Are you going to go and get a couple of veteran guys to kind of calm the locker room down so they have some experience in the room?
Yeah.
It's still not going to be enough. Like, Pittsburgh waited a year before trying to load up at the deadline.
Mm-hmm.
They let Crosby and Malkin go to the playoffs once and see what it was like. Then Ray Shiro went out and went for it at the deadline, which was the right thing to do. And
no, I think that's good. Yeah, I agree.
I think that Quenneville and company, I can't remember who the GM, Dale Talon over in Chicago, should do a similar thing. They should wait it out a year and then let this year ride, figure out who's going to be their goaltender of the future, trade the other one off in the offseason, pick up a quality backup. There'll be plenty of them out there,
mm-hmm.
and then use the extra assets to go and fill in and find out in this year's playoffs what it is you're going to need for next year's.
Yeah.
Get Taves and Kane and Sharp and all those kids, get them the experience they need.
Yeah.
You've got one more year with Martin Havlat. use it to your advantage.
Absolutely. And also, you know, look at where they are. They're solidly in fourth. In fourth. And the only reason they can't move up any higher than that is because of the Red Wings and the divisional, you know, the divisional number ones. And right. if they had gotten into the playoffs right now, today, they would play the Vancouver Canucks. And I have no problem saying that I believe that the Blackhawks would smoke the Canucks at this point. You know?
Well, the Canucks have a lot of playoff experience. They're going to be very savvy. So, mm-hmm. you know, again, Chicago.
Oh, and they're on a hot streak right now as well, winning four, you know, their last four games. That's pretty solid in the Vancouver camp. But, you know, I still think that the Blackhawks are the ones who would emerge victorious from that one. It would be a good battle.
I think it would be a good round, and I would take playoff experience. I handicap it pretty highly, and I would take Vancouver over Chicago in seven in that series. But that's just me. Wow. I've been trying to sidestep this all evening long. We should talk about it. We'll talk about the Miller. We're going to talk about the Miller injury because it's just one of those things. And I'm not going to go off on a complete rant on how Scott. Yeah. We need to throw the book at Scott Gomez or anything like that. I'm not going to do that. I am going to say it's pretty obvious to me that this is a slew foot. And it's, you know, the book has been for the last month or so, and everybody's been talking about it. And you and I have talked about it a bunch. Mm-hmm. That Miller's gotten a bit of a reputation with the referees for whining to them about, hey, protect my crease. But the truth of the matter is that he gets run all night long. And he's been getting run, and they've been screaming about it in Buffalo now for over a month. It was obvious in the home and home against Ottawa that Ottawa's game plan was to get in Miller's grill, get underneath his skin, and get him out of his rhythm. And it got them 3 points. It won them a shootout, and then it won them the next game. And so since then, there's been a little bit there's been increased activity there. So now we have a classic 4-point game between two teams that are going different directions in the standings, but both still clinging to a playoff spot. The Sabres are smoking them 3-0 early in the third period, and a cheap dump in. Scott Gomez goes in hard to the net, goes in hard to forecheck the only guy back there who's Miller. And when you watch the replay carefully, you'll see him right at the end turn his leg to pin the leg, the one leg up against the boards. It's a classic slew foot, and it's really easy to, one, disguise, and two, get away with, which he did both of. So it is what it is. I mean, I'd be hard pressed to say that if I was Scott Gomez, I wouldn't have done the same thing. Desperate player, wanting to make the playoffs. My best chance of making the playoffs is to rattle the goaltender, and maybe if things break badly, I don't intend to injure him, but I'm not going to cry about it if it happens. Mm-hmm. It's hockey. It's the way it is.
Right.
But there's no way you can get around saying that that's not a slew foot. Well, I've seen enough of them.
Here's one of the things I got out of that video that I think that, you know, I mean, when I saw that video yes, it is a slew foot. It's absolutely a slew foot. One of the things I got out of that was the first thing I looked at was where was the puck? For Scott Gomez to go after that puck, to go behind the net, there's only one reason to do that when the goaltender's back there, and that is to chase the puck down. If the goaltender's firing it around, you know, you go past the goaltender as best you can, all of these things. Okay? Where the puck was between the boards and Miller. It was close to the boards, and Miller was tight to the boards. If Gomez is going back there, he's got to make a quick decision whether or not he is going to chase after that puck, stop, slam into the boards himself, or whatnot. I'm not excusing taking out a goaltender, but to say that there was intent to injure, as Ruff was saying, I'm not buying that. I'm not buying it for a second. I don't know how people view Scott Gomez. I don't know enough.
His reputation is pretty clean, and that's the issue.
Yeah, and here's the thing. Nobody else went after Gomez. Nobody decided to drop the gloves with him.
The second phase of this discussion, which we'll get to in a minute, because I've got a lot of information on that.
And here's Ruff, you know, trying to spur on his team. I could see Ruff saying things in the media, because he's not shy about saying things in the media, that would make his team try and get his team into a focused position, down the stretch, we have to focus on this. And you know what, if it's going to make you angry enough to get a performance out of you that's going to keep us in the playoff position, I'm going to say it. That wouldn't surprise me at all. I'm just not buying that Scott Gomez intended to injure Ryan Miller. I'm not buying it for a second.
I'm going to tell you that, one, Lindy Ruff doesn't really play politics like that. He gets accused of it all the time, but he's really not doing it. He's actually really quite – he actually is literally wearing his heart on his sleeve. I can tell you two things about what happened. One, Ruff saw it as an intent to injure, period. Mm-hmm. That's that. There's just – whether you agree with it or not is immaterial. That's the way he saw it. So two, the next shift on the ice, Gostad faced off against Gomez and didn't do anything about it, which was unsettling. And at some point, right after that, now I didn't see the injury live because I was putting my daughter to bed, and I came right out and I looked at it, and it was Patrick Lalime in net, and the score was 3-1, and I'm like, all right, what in the hell happened? Mm-hmm. And I didn't actually see the replay of the injury until after the game was over because they never showed it again on MSG. But I did remember seeing Coletta on the ice for one shift and him and Gomez yapping at each other. And Rick Jenneret asking Rob Ray, hey, so you want to translate what's being said behind the benches? And there's Rob Ray going, nah, man, this is a family show. Can't do that. And it was really funny. But, you know, and I'm still trying to get caught up here as to what's going on. But the truth is that Ruff sent Coletta and company out to go and send a message to Gomez. Mm-hmm. Gomez ran around away. They got near each other, and the referees absolutely stopped all of everything, anything potentially cold. Got everybody separated, refused to let there be any quote-unquote shenanigans and well-I-oughtas out there. And then one of the referees, I do not know who it is, went right over to Ruff and very animatedly spoke to him. And they had a very heated discussion. Mm-hmm. And that heated discussion, which Lindy won't say anything about, but you can damn well know, is went something like this. If you try something 2 years ago, I'll make sure that you're shorthanded for the rest of the game and you'll lose this game. So now we got the entire Buffalo media going hog wild that the Sabres are soft and they won't retaliate and they didn't do anything and this team, you know, and all of this stuff. And Jerry Sullivan's going completely off the deep end, even though he knows damn well that Ruff was warned by the referee and the league not to do anything else. And he told his players not to do anything. And that's the way it went down for the rest of the evening. But he was mad. You could see it at the press conference. You could see it in his face. Watch the video of his press conference after the game. You can see it. He wanted to go over and knock Gomez's teeth in himself. But he can't do that. I mean, you could just see it on his face. He was that angry.
Right. No, I can understand he was angry. And you know, some of that, I think, is probably spurred on by fear. What is he going to do now? He's got to go to Lalime. He doesn't have enough depth in goaltending to do anything else.
I don't know. You at the end of the day, you're going to buy one major goaltender, okay? And you make that choice. You have, at the end of the day, you buy one major goaltender, and you really can't have room for two on a roster. Now, I'm not going to argue with you that I think that Lindy Ruff always handles his goaltenders well. I think he doesn't handle his backup goaltenders as well as he should. Probably should have played Liam 3 or 4 more games earlier in the season. I think he was hoping to do so had the team not tanked through most of November, December. If they had a 4 or 5 higher point cushion in the standings, I think you would have seen Liam play a little bit more recently than he has. But now that they're in it right down to the wire, he's got to play Miller every night, because, or as many nights as he can, because that's what he feels like he has to do to get to the playoffs. And the playoffs, by the way, are absolutely important. If they don't make the playoffs in Buffalo, the team will be blown up and they will be at the salary floor next year. Mm-hmm. That's how bad it is.
Well,
I can tell you that right now. That's where the situation is. But regardless of – and by God, Scott Gomez, it doesn't matter. And at the end of the day, I don't really care one way or the other. But I don't – it doesn't even matter that this was Ryan Miller. I don't like to see I don't want to see goaltenders run like this under any circumstances. I don't want to see Steve Mason hit this way. I don't want to see Peter Budaj hit this way. I don't want to see Jason Barber hit this way. I don't want to see anyone hit like this, because Gomez could have gone for the puck and done everything else without turning his leg in and pinning Miller's leg against the board. He knew what he was doing. And to say that these guys who can skate around a dime, for Christ's sake, at 30 miles an hour, can't control them, I'm just not buying it. I'm just not buying it. I can see it from I can see your point and everything else. And I know maybe Gomez wasn't going in with an intent to injure, but he damn well was putting himself in a position to have a happy accident.
Well, here's the thing about one of the things you just said is that these guys can skate around a dime. You know what? You're right. They can. But you know what a dime doesn't do? Doesn't move. when you throw a dime out there on the ice, it doesn't move. And
Miller went straight back to the boards. He was pinned up against the boards and moving the puck around. I'm not saying you don't challenge Ryan Miller because he's not the world's greatest puck handler. I'm not even going to argue that point. Right. I don't even care if they. I don't even care if they get into his grill and run over him in the crease and stuff like that. It's part of the game.
I'm saying that if everybody was predictable, you wouldn't see teammates running into each other on the ice. You wouldn't see that. You wouldn't see stuff like that. He couldn't make a decision.
In no way can you ascribe that to a pure accident. I'm sorry. It's as much half accident as it is intent. And he got his desired effect, which was to knock out a franchise goaltender, an absolute Vezina candidate at this point in time for all intents and purposes, which gives him a much better shot of making the playoffs, which he has to do.
Then what you're saying is it's intent to injure. I
think it's intent to opportunity. I'll give him this way. It's intent to opportunity. You put yourself in a position and it's target of opportunity. And again, like I said, if I was in Scott Gomez's position, I'd be hard pressed to believe that I wouldn't do the same thing. Of course, if I was a defenseman of the Buffalo Sabres, I would have broken Scott Gomez's neck with a clothesline about three shifts later, which is why I'm not playing in the NHL, regardless of the fact that I'm bald, fat, and can't skate. If I had played hockey as a kid and tried to make it, I wouldn't have made it out of junior, because the first time somebody like face washed me, I would have gone ballistic and tried to castrate him, because I don't have any control over my temper. Okay, well that's why I get to talk about hockey and not actually play a game.
I played five games over this past weekend, and I'll tell you right now, I am in some serious pain right now. I may not have a high ankle sprain, but I twisted my ankle, stopped a puck with my left outer leg, or sorry, right outer leg, and you should see the bruise. I'd put a picture up online, but it'd probably be not safe for work. You know, it's close enough, but it's a good bruise. I don't know. I'm not. I feel like that. Oftentimes, people buy. Buy the Lindy Ruff Kool-Aid just a little bit too much, and that sometimes he needs to take a step back. He needs to cool it. And if he's just trying to motivate his players through the media, then that needs to be recognized as well. That I'm just not buying what he's selling.
That's fine, and I'm okay with that. You don't have to, but I can tell you, having watched Ruff for 12 years. More often than not, he's right, and I've seen it enough times. I'm firmly convinced that there are different standards of behavior for different teams in this league. And I'm not just calling out Buffalo as being the only one that gets the shaft. I know it that the, every team that certain jerseys, certain sweaters, certain players, they get different treatment from the league. We can go over the stats for all the years that Darcy Tucker was in Toronto, never once got suspended. How long did it last in a Colorado uniform?
Not long.
You can go that route with any number of players and any number of teams. So I'm just, when you've been in the situation and you've been shafted by the league as many times as Ruff has, you've been shafted by the referees as many number of times as he has, goals through the sides of the net, Stanley Cups taken away, the whole nine yards and little things over the years. Sorry. At the end of the day, it's really hard not to drink the NHL's Kool-Aid. No, everything's on the up and up.
It's all different opinions. I mean, I don't buy that the Stanley Cup was taken away. I just don't buy it.
Okay.
That's one of those things that you and I could probably do an hour on. But
I'm not going to do an hour on it anymore. Skate was in the crease, and Dallas would have never made it out of the first. We never made it out of the first round because three goals in three consecutive games against Edmonton were called back for exactly the same reason. They would have never made it out of the first round.
And in the last round you got to win four games, and Buffalo had only won two at that point.
And Dallas didn't win four.
I'm not saying that
1999 Stanley Cup is still up in the air because Dallas never won four games. They were awarded one and they won three. I'm not saying that they took our cup away. I'm just saying that we've yet to complete Game 6 nor play Game 7. That's all I'm saying.
You done?
Sure.
Holy cow. One last thing. Final thing on my docket. The Montreal Canadiens, Gustietson's brothers. I'm having a hard time giving a damn. You?
Me too, because I don't even know what happened. I heard oblique references to it all day on Saturday during Hockey Day in Canada, and yeah. But I didn't care enough to actually find out what happened.
Allegedly, the Kostitsyn brothers have an association with an organized crime guy, and you know, it's just another Montreal Canadiens Le Scandale, you know, and I just don't care. You know, maybe it's just that my sensitivity to all things NHL have been knocked down to the point where, hey, did somebody break their neck? No? Okay. And we move on. You know, it's
Russian players involved in somebody from Russian organized crime.
Yeah.
Yawn. I've heard this about 1,000 times. So, yeah. Whatever. There's a lot of organized crime in Russia, including the government. So, it's endemic to the culture. Somebody is likely going to know somebody who's connected to organized crime, 6 degrees of separation, and, you know, Kevin yeah. Bacon and all. So, I'm having a hard time, Karen. Yeah.
Well, I think that pretty much covers the week.
Yeah, with a fair amount of gusto, actually.
Yeah. Tom, thanks a lot.
No problem, James. Anytime.
That does it this week for The Rink, and can you imagine? We didn't even mention the salary cap once. You can find my blog over at jerseysandhockeylove.com, and Tom's writing can occasionally be found at nhl.fanhouse.com. You can look up The Rink online at www.rinkpodcast.com, and that's where you can find out how to subscribe on iTunes or even follow our Twitter feed, which is at twitter.com/rinkpodcast. You can email us at rink@rinkpodcast.com or pick up the phone and call us, 845-704-RINK. That's 845-704-7465. As always, thanks a lot for listening to The Rink.